Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, reading Section A of the Midland Reporter Telegram, Weekend Edition, published Saturday, December 3rd, 2022. Front page. Officials describe coming road projects. Growth in city doesn't allow for a break. By Stuart Doreen. When Jose Ortiz talks about what's next for the city of Midland in terms of roads, slowing down isn't mentioned. The growth taking place inside the city won't allow it. The director of engineering services for the city of Midland said finishing up the road bond projects are a top priority. That includes the last project, Main Street from Wadley Avenue to Ohio Avenue, which won't start up until A Street and Garfield are completed, Ortiz said. That means the project might go out for bid in December 2023. One problem the city faces is the construction the state has planned for State Highway 349, also known as Big Spring Street, from Interstate 20 to Loop 250. We need to keep a north-south corridor open, Ortiz said. New roads coming. There is currently no faster growing part of Midland than the 349 corridor in Northeast Midland. The city has planned for years the growth that would take place in the Northeast, including the investment of tens of millions of dollars in water and utilities upgrades. As construction takes place east of State Highway 349, the need for better roads has followed. Ortiz addressed the need, including the extension of fairgrounds north of Loop 250. Construction of the fairgrounds extension from Loop 250 to Mockingburg, he said, will begin early next year and take around 270 days. The fairgrounds road addition, Ortiz said, will give the city another north-south corridor from Northeast Midland toward downtown and hopefully take stress off Highway 349. What Northeast Midland is experiencing has already taken place in West and Northwest Midland. Currently, State Highway 191 and County Road 60 Briarwood are the only east-west corridors in that region. The extension of Wadley Avenue to State Highway 158 will change that. Ortiz said Wadley basically stops near Stonegate Fellowship. He expects that project will be bid out early next year and wrap up around 2024. At the same time, an extension improvement at State Highway 158 takes place. Ask residents around the city about what they want to see, and a person is likely to get numerous answers, including improvements to streets in older Midland, like Central, East, and South Midland, improvements to Mockingbird Lane in Northwest Midland to become more of a thoroughfare, improvements to Briarwood beyond Avalon in far Northwest Midland. Ortiz said planning will start with the next council retreat when city leaders provide direction about their priorities. Direction, he said, leads to engineering plans being finished and then all important securing of funds to purchase right-of-way and construction. Some may remember Loop 250 improvements in far Northeast Midland that were made possible because the Midland Development Corporation and the City of Midland were aggressive in doing engineering needed and making development corporation funds available to the state. Back in Northeast Midland, Ortiz said plans could be ready in 18 months for an overpass at Todd Road and Loop 250, which would be another valuable north-south corridor through the city. Having the plans ready could allow the project to move along quicker than the five-year estimate that officials expect. The same is true with an extension of Fairgrounds and then Todd Road to Occidental Highway. Longer-term projects. An important part of community planning are those projects that are 10 to 20 years into the future. Before Craddock Highway became a reality in helping to move traffic from I-20 and Midland International Airport to State Highway 349 north of Midland, it was an idea being talked about in the late 1990s as part of the La Entrada al Pacifico trade corridor. Extending Craddock Highway east is the next leg of that longer-term project. Ortiz said officials in Midland-Odessa would like alternative routes, especially for freight. Partnerships with oil companies and the Midland-Odessa Metropolitan Planning Corp organization are important here, he said. Again, these projects take years from concept to paving, to secure the right-of-way, for the engineering, to secure funding, and then for the construction. Editor's note, the previous was a second article about city road projects. Bearish sentiment undercut strong week for oil. Oil ends week just below $80, up more than $3.50, by Mella McEwen. Crude prices mostly enjoyed a strong post-Thanksgiving week, buoyed in part by a demand outlook, improved by possible easing of China's zero COVID policies. Prices, however, were undercut Friday by concerns a stronger-than-expected labor market could prompt the Federal Reserve to continue its monetary tightening policies to cool inflation, and reports the European Union has agreed to cap the price of Russian oil. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange rose 4 of 5 trading days, including a $2.35 jump Wednesday that sent prices back above $80 per barrel. Those bearish headwinds, however, resulted in a $1.24 drop Friday, with prices ending the week at $79.98 per barrel. Still, that's up from $76.28 at last Friday's close. The posted price closed the week at $76.46 per barrel, according to Plains All American. Natural gas prices on the NYMEX endured a rough week, falling 4 of 5 days, beginning with a 31.2-cent fall Monday and ending with a 45.7-cent decline Friday. Henry Hub futures on the NYMEX closed the week at $6.281 per MCF, well below the $7.024 at last Friday's close. Eyes will be on events around the globe, especially as members of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and Allied Nations meet over the weekend. You may have OPEC Plus cutting production, said Carr Ingham, energy economist from Amarillo. You may have a globe starved of production. Also impacting energy prices is whether or not global economies are headed for recessions amid increasing concerns about inflation, he said. People are on the fence on where the economy is headed, he told the Reporter Telegram by telephone. Markets seem to think a recession is coming. Then you have the extension of oil releases from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. I think most of the energy price declines are because a recession is expected. Edward Moya, senior market analyst, The Americas with Oanda, said in his daily e-newsletter next week will be a massive for oil price volatility. The OPEC Plus meeting should confirm their commitment to keep prices supported, he wrote. Many expect OPEC to keep output steady now that this is a virtual meeting, but we can't rule out that they might want deeper oil output cuts. The price cap on Russian crude oil will draw attention, as it could be difficult to enforce. The crude demand outlook could hinge on China, and if they continue to soften their COVID policy, and if their trade data deteriorates more than expected. Crude's fundamentals have started to turn green, and if that momentum continues, Brent shouldn't have trouble getting above the $90 level, Moya said of the global benchmark. The U.S. benchmark, WTI, traditionally trades several dollars below. Kent says buying Mesa Vista Ranch was fast and furious. CEO hopes to keep Pickens' vision at a commercial component, by Mella McEwen. Legendary oil man T. Boone Pickens' legacy will live on through the new owners of a portion of his Mesa Vista Ranch northeast of Amarillo. Midlander Bill Kent, chief executive officer of Kent Companies, headed a group of buyers who bought the 36,000-plus acre western side of the ranch this week, which includes the 25,000-square-foot lodge. Cattle rancher Travis Chester bought the 27,700-acre eastern section of the ranch in September. He created an incredible opportunity, Kent told the Reporter Telegram in a telephone interview. It's so gorgeous, all kinds of water. He created a paradise. Kent said his goal is to honor Pickens' vision and maintain the property to as close to his vision as possible. But where Pickens used the property for personal enjoyment, hosting friends and acquaintances for hunting and fishing excursions, Kent wants to bring a more commercial aspect to the property. My vision for it is to be not so much a personal property, but something like a membership resort, he explained. Something that revolves around hunting and the amenities there. Let people enjoy the property, but honor his vision. I want to honor the property, be good stewards of the land, and do what is in its DNA. Kent said he became involved in the acquisition through a good friend from Oklahoma who was part of a group trying to buy the property. The lead guy who was leading the acquisition dropped out, and I stepped into the role, he recounted. Noting that the deal only closed Wednesday, it was fast and furious. From the inside pages, Biz Buzz, Bear Claw Evolves from Knife Sharpening Shop by Ben Schaefer. Bear Claw Knife and Shear President Richard Steinberg identified its most popular items during the Christmas season, and a bestseller is a traditional favorite. I'd say pocket knives, because we can engrave people's names on a pocket knife, or a logo, or a brand, Steinberg said. Oilfield companies come to us, and they'll buy a bunch of knives, get them engraved, and hand them out to their employees. While engraved pocket knives are popular around the holidays, Steinberg said kitchen cutlery is also in demand. Bear Claw's website sells chef's knives, Japanese cutlery, paring knives, carving and meat knives, bread knives, specialty knives, and knife sets. Bear Claw was founded in the mid-1980s as a knife sharpening shop in New Mexico by a man named Chuck Giles. It has since expanded into Big Spring and Midland, selling a wide range of products, including, but not limited to, cookware, personal protection tools, outdoor gear, spices, apparel, and knives for personal or kitchen use. According to Steinberg, the quality and value of Bear Claw's products set them apart. The quality makes us unique, he said. All our products are very high quality, and really what sets us apart is whether you buy a $20 knife or a $2,000 knife, you're going to get your money's worth. Big Spring was the first West Texas location for Bear Claw, said Steinberg. Said the Big Spring location began to see more and more business from Midlanders. After a nice 10 years solely in Big Spring, officials decided to expand into Midland. It finally got to the point where it was pretty obvious it was a big need in Midland, Steinberg claimed. At Bear Claw, products come at all price points. If you're looking at just the knives, they start around $20 and they'll go up into the thousands of dollars, Steinberg said. On December 10th, Bear Claw will host an open house, including a raffle for its products at its Midland location. Editor's note, BizBuzz will look at opportunities to buy local items this holiday season during the month of December. MPD seeks info on deadly shooting in West Midland. The Midland Police Department is asking for information on a deadly shooting that occurred Wednesday evening in West Midland. The shooting took place just before 5 p.m. at the Renew Andrews Apartments, located at 1902 North Midland Drive. A 17-year-old boy sustained multiple gunshot wounds and was transported to Midland Memorial Hospital, where he was later pronounced dead, MPD reported. An investigation into this deadly shooting has led to the discovery that multiple suspects involved in the shooting fled the scene in a white four-door vehicle. Midland MPD asks anyone with information in reference to the shooting, contact the police department at 432-685-7108. DPS reports Midlander dies after rollover. From staff reports, a 32-year-old Midland man died Wednesday following a rollover off State Highway 158 west of Midland, according to a Department of Public Safety news release. DPS reported that Benjamin Montgomery was driving a 2018 Toyota 4Runner west on State Highway 158 when, for an unknown reason, veered across the oncoming traffic lane. The 4Runner then struck a fence and rolled over multiple times. Montgomery was ejected during the crash and was pronounced deceased on scene, DPS reported. The accident happened at 5:20 p.m. at 3.8 miles west of Midland. Montgomery was not wearing a seatbelt, according to DPS. West Texas positioned for economic growth. by Mella McEwen. Fueled largely by its oil and natural gas resources, the West Texas region is expected to outpace the rest of the state economically through 2026. Economist Ray Perryman, whose Perryman Group compiled the forecast for the region for the period 2021 through 2026, told the Reporter Telegram by email that oil and gas production will be indeed the primary driver. The region, which includes the Permian Basin as well as the Concho Valley, includes 30 counties with a population of 679,460 people. Midland, Odessa, and San Angelo serve as metropolitan statistical areas. It holds 2.29% of the population, 2.25% of the state's wage and salary jobs, 2.99% of the state's real personal income, and contributes 5.71% of the state's real gross product. From 2021 to 2026, West Texas is forecast to see real personal income climb 3.85% annually, population growth of 45,511, job growth of 37,623 jobs, and real retail sales rise 3.88% annually. Real gross product is expected to expand by approximately $34.32 billion or 6.48% compound annual growth rate. The mining sector is projected to lead RGP growth short term with a gain of $29.36 billion. In 2026, this sector is likely to be 74.78% of the region's total RGP. The region's job growth rate is forecast to be 2.46%, with the mining sector expanding at the fastest pace at 5.44%, or 11,389 jobs. Next is the services industry, with a growth rate of 3.11%, or 14,500 jobs. Warehousing is third, with a growth rate of 1.96%, or 1,214 jobs, and then the trade sector, with a rate of 1.85%, or 4,523 jobs. Drilling Down in Midland County in Permian, by Mella McEwen. There was very little change in the nation's drilling activity as crews returned from the Thanksgiving holiday. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes said Friday the U.S. rig count, which it has released weekly since the 1940s, was unchanged at 784 for the week. That's still 215 rigs more than the 569 counted the previous year. Likewise, the number of rigs drilling for crude was unchanged at 627, 160 more than the 467 reported last year. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas also held steady at 155, 53 more than the 102 seen last year. Texas's rig count inched down one rig to 371, 100 more than the 271 drilling across the state a year ago. New Mexico also dropped by one to 104 rigs. While Texas and New Mexico were the only producing states to see declines in drilling activity, Louisiana, one, and Oklahoma, one, were up. The Permian Basin fell by two rigs to 350, 67 more than the 283 tallied last year. Lee County, New Mexico, continued to be the most active county in the Permian with 68 rigs, up three for the week. Reeves County was second with 36 rigs, unchanged for the week. Martin County followed with 34 rigs, down one. Eddy County, New Mexico, tumbled four rigs, the biggest drop for the week, to 33. Midland County reported 31 rigs, down one for the week. Loving County had 25 rigs, down one, while Howard County had 19 rigs at work for fourth week. Glasscock and Ward counties each reported 17 rigs, unchanged for the week. Upton County gained a rig to see 15 at work within county lines. Enverus Foundation, part of the energy-focused software as a service firm, Enverus, said the U.S. rig count that it reports dropped by 14 for the week ended November 30th. The total of 873 active rigs is down 2% from a month ago, but up 26% year over year. In major plays, declines were seen across the board, except for the Gulf Coast, where the total of 121 was flat week over week and marked a 2022 high. The Permian count fell by 4 rigs to 319, and the Anadarko Basin fell by 3 to 88. Drops of 1 rig each were seen in the Appalachian Basin, 56, DJ Basin, 20, and Williston Basin, 40. Notably, the Permian count is down by 15 rigs over the last month. Obituaries published in the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Saturday, December 3rd, 2022. Anita Martinez Romero, 12/9/1947 to 6/6/2022. Anita Martinez Romero, age 74, passed away in her home on June 6, 2022 in Midland, Texas. Anita is survived by her two children, Anna Maria and husband John Lindgren, and David Romero, and their children, Adam Lindgren and Hannah Isabel, and Xander Romero. Also survived by her sister, Mary Helen, and husband Tom Costigan, and Emily and husband Manuel Gutierrez. A mass will be held on Friday, 10 a.m., December 9th, 2022, at Immaculate Heart of Mary Cathedral in Las Cruces, New Mexico. Anyone who knew and loved Anita is invited. Ann McFadden. Cherilee Ann Porterfield McFadden of Grapevine passed away peacefully on the morning of November 12, 2022 in Dallas, Texas, after enduring a lengthy disease. She was born on September 24, 1938 in Littlefield, Texas, the daughter of Glenn Denson Porterfield and Willie Margaret Dodd. She is survived by her husband David, her three children, David Glenn McFadden, Amy Ruth McFadden, and Terry McFadden, also seven grandchildren, and her sister Karen. A memorial service will be held at Grapevine Botanical Garden, Bessie Mitchell House, December 21st, 2022, from 4:30 to 6:30. Larry Gale Koeninger. Larry Gale Koeninger, 73, of Midland, Texas, passed away on October 26, 2022, in Odessa, Texas. Gale was born January 2, 1949, in Memphis, Texas, to Veda and Jean Koeninger. He married his wife, Elizabeth, Liz, May 4, 1991. Gale is also survived by his sister, Dana Ferguson, of Amarillo. He also leaves behind a loving extended family, his sister-in-law and brother-in-law, Sharon and Stuart Sampson of Pagosa Springs, Colorado, brother-in-law Kevin Light, and nephews Montgomery Light and Caden Light of Midland, sister-in-law Marcy Light and nephew Shay, along with great-nephews Braxton and Bentley Light, all of Midland, and official member of our tribe, Pam Messer, also of Midland. Gale was preceded in death by his parents, Veda and Jean. Gale leaves behind a legacy of kindness, generosity, love, and laughter. It is the wish of the family that there be no funeral service. A memorial gathering of his friends and family will be held at Midland Community Theater on Monday, December 5th, 2022 at 6 p.m. The family also requests that in lieu of flowers, memorial donations be made to Midland Community Theater, 2000 West Wadley Avenue, Midland, Texas, or just be nice to everyone. Gale would love that. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Max Cessna. Max Cessna, age 64, passed away Saturday, November 26, 2022. He was born in Midland September 6, 1958, to Lowell and Luella Cessna. He was the third eldest of five boys, Danny, Greg, Max, Jonathan, and Sam. After marrying Julie Crocker, Max became the proud father of two daughters and, in time, papa to several grandchildren. Max is survived by a stepmother, Carolyn Cessna, daughter Christina and her husband, William Whitaker, daughter Candace and her husband, Colby Burmaster. Also grandchildren and numerous nieces and nephews. Max is predeceased in death by his father, Lowell, his mother, Luella, and his brother, Danny. The viewing will be held Sunday, December 4th from 6 to 8 p.m. and funeral services will be held Monday, December 5th at 11:30 a.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pippian Funeral Home, 2508 North Big Spring Street, Midland, Texas, 79705. Graveside will be held at 1 p.m. at Rest Haven Memorial Park, 4616 North Big Spring Street, Midland, Texas, 79705. Max had a heart for the men and women who have served our country. In lieu of flowers, please consider a donation on Max's behalf to the Wounded Warrior Project, www.woundedwarriorproject.org. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net. Or you can visit our website at LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Wilmoth Skiles. Wilmoth McCarty Skiles, 91, of Langtree and Midland, Texas, passed away November 20th, 2022. Wilmoth was born in 1931 in Mertzon, Texas, to Tillman and Ruby Rosser McCarty, and lived her childhood in Mertzon. Wilmoth is preceded in death by her beloved husband, Jack, in 2020, her parents, four sisters, and a brother. She is also survived by her daughter, Peggy Skiles of Big Spring, son, Jack Raymond Skiles Jr. of Alpine, and son, Russell Skiles, and wife, Diane of La Mesa. She was so proud of her granddaughter, Kimberly, and Kimberly's husband, Nathan Vaughn, and their daughters, Lily and Amelia, and her grandson, Aaron, and his wife, Madison, of Lubbock. A memorial service for both Wilmoth and Jack has been scheduled for January 14th, 2023, at 11 a.m. at the school in Comstock. Memorial donations may be made to the Comstock ISD, PTO, P.O. Box 905, Comstock, Texas, 78837. Death notices from Saturday, December 3rd. Billy Appy Helbert Huckabee. Billy Appy Helbert Huckabee, 81, of Midland, passed away Tuesday, November 29th, 2022. A funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, December 9th at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Midland. Arrangements under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at npwelch.com. Carolyn Fott. Carolyn Fott of Odessa died on 11-28-22 in Odessa, Texas. Funeral service will be held on 12-3-22, 10 a.m. at Redeemer Lutheran Church, with burial immediately following at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland. Deidre Una Shocklett. Deidre Una Shocklett of Midland died on 11-15-22 in Midland. Funeral service, followed by burial, will be held on 12-5-22, 12 p.m., at AHFH. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland. Jeremy Crabtree. Jeremy Crabtree of Odessa died 12-23-22 in Odessa. A celebration of life will be held on 12-3-22, 3 p.m. at Calvary Assembly of God. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Saturday, December 3rd. Fake accounts bother some, not others. Some elected officials called out as phony profile spread. The story was written by Kim Smith. Back in August 2018, the folks behind Facebook removed hundreds of pages, groups, and accounts after realizing people in Iran and Russia had created them in a coordinated effort to influence American politics. It's not just happening on the national front, however. Just this week alone, someone created a fake Odessa Police Department Facebook page and a fake Odessa American page. Both real accounts have been verified by Facebook and have a blue checkmark indicating so. In one instance, the fake OPD poster announced 911 was unavailable and urged people to call the Ector County Sheriff's Office, stating, "They ain't doing nothing anyways." The fake OA poster appeared in one post to be attacking either the Downtown Odessa Group or OPD. Two other fake accounts devoted to local politics have attracted dozens of followers. One, using the profile photo of a dead man from North Carolina, had 158 friends as of Friday, including 5 Odessa City Council members, 2 Ector County Commissioners, and 2 judges. When announcing their decision to remove the pages and to continue doing so, Meta stated, quote, "We ban this kind of behavior because we want people to be able to trust the connections they make on Facebook," end quote. Vargas and Lane. Here locally, however, there appears to be a real split between those who agree there's an issue with fake profiles and those who take no issue with it. Those opposed to the fake profiles worry they may be used to spread disinformation and think they're just unethical. The other side contend the profiles enable people to get their side of the issue out there, and it's up to Facebook followers to do their own research to discern what is the truth and what isn't. They also pointed out Odessans for Ethical Leadership, whose spokesperson is former Odessa City Councilman Dewey Bryant, posts anonymously. Both of the fake profiles, Finnegan Lane and Josiah Vargas, are staunch supporters of Mayor Javier Hoven and large city councilwoman Denise Swanner and District 1 Councilman Mark Mata. They've spoken out in favor of the recent efforts by the three to pass raises for Odessa Fire Rescue employees and have taken to task Councilmember Steve Thompson and outgoing councilmembers Tom Sprawls, Mary Willis, and Dietrich White for voting against the raises. All 4 have said they were voting no because they prefer to wait until a compensation study for all city employees has been completed. Lane and Vargas have complained bitterly about the outgoing council members voting in favor of certificates of obligation and praised Hoven for recently asking Medical Center Hospital to repay a $3 million loan 22 months early. Lane, whose profile picture is that of the deceased man, accused nearly a dozen people in a recent post of passing contracts between each other, pulling taxpayer dollars off the top. Both Lane and Vargas have celebrated the replacement of Sprawls and Willis with Greg Cannell and Chris Haney, who are perceived to be aligned with Hoven, Swanner, and Mata. Vargas posted photos of Cannell and Haney with Swanner, Hoven, and Mata after they were sworn in. He praised their 5-1 vote to create an abortion ban in Odessa. New councilmember Gilbert Vasquez abstained. Thompson opposed it. Quote, "I, for one, am glad to see the end of this reign of tyranny and a beginning of an era of transparency," Lane wrote under an OEL post recently. Vargas, who has used a stock Getty image as his profile picture, also appears to be interested in the Ector County Utility District. When Ector County District Court Judge John Schroed ruled in October that ECUD's elections could continue, Fargus inquired, quote, "Holy hell, was this judge paid off? The law was pretty dang clear. Looks like the swamp continues to play their tricks," end quote. There exists at least one other anonymous Facebook profile that espoused less than favorable opinions on Hoeven on at least one occasion. Odessa Whistleblowers asked the OA under one of its Facebook posts why the OA hasn't asked about a trip Hoeven took to Mexico at taxpayer expense. The person behind the profile also made salacious claims about Hoeven and Mata that were deleted. The OA did write about Hoven's trip, and it doesn't appear as though Odessa Whistleblowers have posted anything since. The page's profile picture is that of Dana Carvey as Saturday Night Live's The Church Lady. Lane is a friend of Odessa Whistleblowers. Hypocrisy? Matt Coday, who created the nonprofit trade group Oil and Gas Workers Association 7 years ago, condemned the fake profiles during a recent city council meeting. Then, and again during a recent interview, Coday blasted the creator or creators for what he sees as hypocrisy. Quote, "I think it's a coward's way of trying to say what you want to say without it being attributed to you," Coday said. "If they were really interested in truth, integrity, honesty, and transparency, they would just make the same statements from their personal accounts. I think it's cowardice," end quote. Coday was particularly upset because Swanner thanked Vargas for picking up her lunch tab and later tagging Odessa Development Corporation board member Jeff Russell to say, quote, "Today was the first time I met him. He picked up my tab at Mi Casa," end quote. Russell himself posted, quote, "Josiah Vargas is one of the best guys I know," end quote. Swanner and Mata said social media just happens to be the way people get their news nowadays, and fake profiles are just a fact of life. Quote, "I have over 2,000 friends on Facebook. I don't research, are they fake, are they real? Who has the time to even put their time and effort into seeing if that account is real or fake?" Swanner said. Swanner described Coday as a loose cannon who has attacked several other elected officials in town and whose opinion doesn't matter to her. She said he probably has fake accounts himself. Quote, "I do hope that he hasn't fallen off his program because he was a recovering alcoholic. He lets everybody know that he's been recovered," Swanner said. As for Vargas, quote, "He did pay for my lunch. I never saw him. I did make a quote, 'Y'all, today was the first day I met him,' which I guess I shouldn't have said that because I didn't actually meet him. But I was at a restaurant." Swanner also expressed surprise the OA thought the issue important enough to write about. Quote, "What's amazing to me is y'all are willing to do a story on fake stuff when you won't report on stuff that happened," Swanner said. "Social media has been around for many years, and people on social media say what they really feel because they don't feel that they can say it without being retaliated on," end quote. She declined to identify any issues or stories the OA hasn't written about. Mata said he thought it was absolutely stupid Coday wasted the council's time by bringing up the fake profiles. Quote, "I have maybe 3,000 friends on Facebook. I guess I can go and question every single one of those friends, but I think it's absolutely silly that the Odessa American, our newspaper in town, is actually doing a story on fake profiles. I mean, that just kind of speaks volumes in itself. There's other important issues that can be discussed and that can be covered," Mata said. The Vargas and Lane pages poked fun at Coday following the council meeting, calling him a stalker and a crazy lunatic. Quote, "The OEL uses fake accounts all the time to attack city leaders. It's just a part of life now. Get over it. Stop crying and whining about it. You sound like a deranged lunatic," the Vargas account posted. Lane tagged the OEL in a post after the meeting, quote, "Hey, Matt Foney, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. I am Josiah Vargas. Chris Gonzalez is Josiah Vargas. Tim Harry is Josiah Vargas. Jeff Russell is Josiah Vargas. Denise Swanner is Josiah Vargas. Matt Stringer is Josiah Vargas. Tisha Crow is Josiah Vargas. Javier Hoven is Josiah Vargas. Jamie Tisdale is Josiah Vargas. But you know what? Nobody on OEL is Josiah Vargas. Hopefully that clears that up for you." Fake social media profiles are a sign of the time, Mata said. Quote, "Even the supposedly upstanding Odessans for ethical leadership are using the same tactics," Mata said. "I guess it's just a point of life. They have guys with fake profiles writing stories for them, commenting on them. All those likes and comments are the same people. They're even probably fake, but for people who go and read that to try to get information are just being misinformed. But if that's what they want to do for information, so be it." End quote. Swanner agreed, quote, "People are going to create profiles no matter what. It's just part of life," Swanner said. Lost cause? She doubts efforts to educate voters about the facts of any particular issue will do any good. Mata shared similar thoughts. Quote, "I think they should always go direct to the elected official for all of the facts, but people just don't do that. They're just going to listen to whoever fits their narrative," Mata said. Kodate denies having his own fake accounts. Quote, "I just have the balls to say whatever I want to say from my personal account. I think it's funny that Denise, Mark, and Javier and that entire council want to scream about truth and integrity and transparency from behind fake profiles," Kode said. He laughed when asked about Swanner's comment about his sobriety. Quote, "I'm so glad that people like her pray for people like me. I've been sober since August 21st, 2018, and I think it's awfully funny that the city councilwoman who thanked an imaginary person for paying for her lunch is trying to discredit me by questioning my sobriety," Cody said. "We have all of these people who are talking about an imaginary person, and I'm the crazy one," end quote. Cody said the reputation of the Republican Party in Odessa has taken a hit and is losing members because of its divisiveness and ugliness showing up on Facebook, Cody said. Russell rejected the idea the fake profiles have revealed a deep division within the Republican Party. Ben Franklin. Russell and fellow ODC board member Chris Crow both said they have no issue with fake profiles and said the U.S. has a long history of people using nom de plumes or pen names. They also both cited Silence Duguid. Silence Duguid was the pen name used by Benjamin Franklin to get 14 essays published in the New England Courant, a newspaper founded and published by his brother James Franklin. According to the Massachusetts Historical Society, Benjamin was 16 at the time, and he wrote in his autobiography he suspected his brother wouldn't have printed them had he known who wrote them. Quote, "Here's what I thought was funny. Nobody has disagreed with anything Josiah Vargas says. Everybody just disagrees with there being a fake profile," Crow said, following the November 22nd council meeting. Bryant, who ran against Hoven for mayor in 2020, didn't give his opinion on the fake profiles, preferring instead to focus on Odessans for Ethical Leadership's goal. Quote, "Our mission is to educate people with the things that are happening within the city and the county, those things that affect our community," Bryant said. As for being spoken ill of, Bryant laughed it off. Quote, "That's okay, because I know who I am and what I am," he said. He is at a loss as to what to do about the misinformation being spread. Quote, "Newspapers are still good news sources," he said, but, quote, "for some of the other, younger generations, it just isn't an avenue for them. They'd rather hit that little Facebook deal, or whatever it might be, and it's instant, end quote. Thompson, who was elected as District 2's councilman 2 years ago, said social media is the worst thing to happen to politics ever. Quote, "You can say whatever you want to say with no consequences," Thompson said. While he checks the OEL Facebook page occasionally, he rarely posts on Facebook anymore because he was tired of being attacked. Those behind the fake profiles either have something to hide or they just don't want to listen to those with differing opinions, Thompson said. If someone posts a factual newspaper story or a factual opinion on certain pages, they just get removed by those behind the scenes, Thompson said. Quote, "They're controlling the political dialogue through their social media source, which makes your paper pretty much irrelevant in the process," Thompson said. "I appreciate you because the people on this side of town, the ones I represent, read the paper, but everybody else does not," end quote. Ector County Commissioner Mike Gardner, one of Lane's Facebook friends, said he was unaware until recently the profile is a fake. He says he tends to accept friend requests when he sees they are interested in politics and or are friends with other friends. He's not happy with the phenomenon. Quote, "It's very unethical, extremely unethical," Gardner said. "I can't understand anybody having the time that it takes to do that. You know, they're obviously intelligent enough to pull that over on Facebook and do that. Wouldn't they be so much better trying to get involved in and make things better for people?" End quote. Gardner said it's sad, but there will always be people who try to hurt others or stir up trouble. Research. Like Mata, Gardner wishes people would seek out other ways to get the facts. Quote, "Pick up the phone and call. There's going to be somebody you can ask whether it's anything going on in the city government or county government," Gardner said. Part of the reason he ran for office was the level of divisiveness he was seeing playing out, Ector County Judge-elect Dustin Fawcett said. Like Gardner, he too trends to friend friends of friends, and he shows up as one of Lane's friends. He accepts that social media is now the way of getting information out, but he's discouraged about how it's been twisted. Quote, "You essentially just have people trolling one another. All of it is a detriment to the discussion of local politics. It brings down the level of discourse in our community, and I'm disappointed by that," Fawcett said. "It's disheartening to me because we're not talking about the actual problems in our community or the solutions. We're talking about comments on Facebook pages," end quote. Anytime there's a big issue going on within the city or the county, Fawcett said misinformation is being spread. Taking a different road. Once in office, Fawcett says he hopes to build bridges and regain the trust of voters. Quote, "I think the divide is more prevalent now. I think that there are multiple factions within our community, but my thought is that, in all honesty, people are closer ideologically than what we think. Even the Democrats in our community and our Republicans are not that far different," Fawcett said. "A lot of the divide just comes down to a struggle over power than true ideological differences. I think that all of the groups think that they know best, but what it comes down to is a lack of communication and an unnecessary amount of animosity," end quote. Rather than engaging in this perpetual war on Facebook, Fawcett said everyone needs to work on real issues such as water, fire service, improving internet connectivity, illiteracy. Quote, "These are things that are challenging our community, but we're not talking about them because we're more concerned that somebody posted an ugly comment online," Fawcett said. Disruptions dodged as diesel shortage eases, national global refining capacity being bolstered. The story was written by Bob Campbell. There is still a national diesel fuel shortage, but a small price drop and the reactivation of a few American refineries have avoided disruptions in the crucial traffic of trucks, trains, and ships. Waco economist Ray Perryman and Texas Oil and Gas Association President Todd Staples say the scenario is getting more complex by the day. Quote, "While diesel supplies remain very tight, they are holding fairly steady," Perryman reported. "Prices have fallen slightly over the past few weeks, though they remain elevated compared to a year ago. Any time we talk about days of supply, it's a snapshot in time. Every day we use some of that supply up, but refineries produce more and add to the supply," end quote. Perryman said the diesel inventory is low for this time of year for a number of reasons. Quote, "We'd like to see a little more slack in the system in case of an event such as a notable outage at a refinery," he said. "But the fact that prices are easing a little is a positive signal that supply and demand are coming into better balance." Quote, "I don't think we'll see the major rearranging of truck routes or schedules or other substantial disruptions so long as there isn't a major problem with the refinery," end quote. The national average price of a gallon of diesel Monday was $5.14, compared to $5.34 on October 24th and $3.72 a year ago. Perryman said supplies will stay tight, but will be sufficient for immediate needs while some refiners finish seasonal maintenance and more capacity comes online in the next year or two. Staples said from Austin that the pandemic led to the loss of millions of barrels per day of distillates, diesel fuel, jet fuel, and the heating oil that's heavily used each winter in the American Northeast, in the United States and abroad. Quote, "Government fiat and pressures to prematurely phase out internal combustion engines are sending the wrong market signals to the industry, and they are a contributing factor to the tighter market conditions being experienced, along with the disruption to the normal supply chain by Russia's aggressive military action," Staples said. "The rush by governments to change market behavior in the future is impacting investment decisions in the present, and it is important that world leaders celebrate the innovative solutions industry is providing to develop cleaner, better, and stronger energy improvements to the use, production, and processing of oil and natural gas," end quote. He said enhancing certainty is the best way to avoid supply imbalances. In Washington, D.C., the U.S. Energy Information Administration says widespread refinery strikes in France are further reducing global diesel supplies. Quote, "In addition, regional production of distillate in the U.S. Northeast has been less than historical levels since the closures of the Philadelphia Energy Solutions refinery in 2019 and the Come-by-Chance refinery in Newfoundland in 2020, an EIA spokesman said. Quote, "We forecast that distillate prices will fall slightly in December as activity at some refineries in Europe increases and U.S. refiners finish their seasonal maintenance. We expect new capacity coming online in the Middle East, China, and the United States through 2023 to contribute to lowering distillate margins. No new refineries are being planned or built in America, but major expansions are underway at a handful of Texas Gulf Coast plants, including ExxonMobil's Beaumont facility, which will increase its capacity by 250,000 barrels per day next year. Gulf Coast refineries are currently making 54% of all the distillates produced in the nation. OC Board approves stadium bid. The Odessa College Board of Trustees approved a $4,900,000 bid from Oprex Commercial Construction in Lubbock for the James Segrest Stadium project. Vice President of Administrative Services Ken Zartner said the college has $5,088,000 in available funds. At a board workshop in November, trustees discussed value engineering measures such as delaying installation of lights, reducing some of the turf, and reducing the number of shade structures from 13 to 5. They can add shade structures as more funds become available, according to the workshop. Also, infrastructure will be in place for lights. Some of the turf that was going to be put in will be concrete. Plans are to put in a digital scoreboard. There is still fundraising to be done, but the project is expected to be complete in fall of 2023. Vice President for Institutional Effectiveness, Janice Hicks, presented data on student experience focus groups. Most students say they enroll because of proximity and it's easy to enroll. Hicks said students feel a sense of belonging. She noted that many of our students are first-generation students. Students like that OC provides lots of help and they feel very supported by the faculty. Financial aid was the number one resource cited by students. Tutoring was mentioned a lot, along with library services, the food pantry, tutoring, library services, advising, and all types of coaches OC has. There were some recommendations, Hicks said. Overall, students may tend not to move forward and persist because life happens. They said awareness should be raised for night, weekend, and online courses for working students, better communication online from adjunct professors, more personal outreach for struggling students, coaching and mentoring access for all students, help with job placement, and more information on what courses transfer to UTPB. Hicks said students shared that OC excels at student support during enrollment, creating a welcoming environment for students, communicating resources via multiple platforms, and faculty support for students. Brian Jones, OC Director of Professional Learning, gave a report on the Texas Commission on Community College Finance about proposed changes to the funding formula for community colleges. The changes will have to be passed by the legislature. President Gregory Williams said OC, quote, really wins in this model because it, first of all, provides more funding overall to community colleges, and secondly, a number of those funds are based on performance, end quote. Board Chair Carrie Johnson said what's important is that performance and success will be rewarded in the proposed funding model. Quote, that's what we do. My concern is that as you get through the process, you don't say, well, you're doing really well, we're not going to fund you as well because some of these others need the help. That's not equal. So as long as it's based on performance and we're all looking at the same performance indicators, then we can compete with anybody, Johnson said. He added that he doesn't want OC to be held at fault for being successful.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.